The Infrastructure Show is brought to you by Wyss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and materials scientists, solving complex problems in contemporary and historic structures since 1956. Learn more at wje.com.
Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University.
And I'm your co-host, Marian Sowers, filling in today for Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
When the Federal Bureau of Reclamation finished construction of the giant Hoover Dam near Boulder City, Nevada in 1936, the country anticipated that this project, which had finally tamed the Colorado River, would ensure a reliable, long-term water supply for the river basin states of Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. And for many decades, it did so. But the western state's drought that has lasted for the past 14 years has resulted in a near-emergency situation because the water level has been falling in Lake Mead, the reservoir behind Hoover Dam.
Here to describe the situation and to tell us about the new intake tunnel being driven under Lake Mead to ensure Nevada continues to access its water source is Dave Johnson. Dave is Deputy General Manager of Engineering and Operations for the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Dave, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
First, tell us something about the Nevada Water Authority, its origins and its functions.
Well, the Southern Nevada Water Authority is a not-for-profit agency that serves the regional water provider for the Las Vegas metropolitan area. It consists of seven different water and wastewater agencies that work together in a cooperative fashion to deal with regional water resources. Essentially, it was created out of necessity. In the late 80s, the Las Vegas Valley was growing very, very quickly, and it became evident that cooperation was going to be required amongst the local water agencies to ensure that we had the resources that we needed and the resources we needed into the future. So in 1991, the Southern Nevada Water Authority was formed, and we are responsible for delivering drinking water, ensuring that water quality, developing additional water resources as we look toward the future, and also managing the regional water conservation programs and those initiatives.
So is it fair to say that your primary source of water is the Colorado River?
Yes, it is. The Colorado River provides 90% of the water to the Las Vegas Valley, and the other 10% is made up of groundwater that we bring in to the Las Vegas Valley Water District and to the city of North Las Vegas.
So can you give us a kind of audio picture of the geography and functionality of the Hoover Dam and the associated bodies of water, Lake Mead and Lake Powell?
Sure. The Hoover Dam obviously dams up the Colorado River and forms Lake Mead. And above that, feeding into Lake Mead, is the Glen Canyon Dam, which backs up and forms Lake Powell. You know, Lake Powell and Lake Mead cooperatively together were originally put together by the Bureau of Reclamation for flood control purposes. And they operate now in tandem to be able to supply the drinking water for the lower basin. In 2007, a cooperative agreement was put together amongst the seven basin states to be able to operate in a coordinated operations agreement. And basically what this does is this allows, based on hydrology, it allows certain amounts based on lake levels and conditions in both reservoirs for certain amounts to be able to be transferred from Lake Powell into Lake Mead in an attempt to try to balance out the two reservoirs.
So the district you serve, does it get water directly from Lake Mead?
It does. We have intake structures that go out into Lake Mead, and those intake structures then pump water to treatment facilities, and then that water is conveyed into the valley. And once it's conveyed into the valley, the Southern Nevada Water Authority provides that water to the purveyor members or the municipalities within the valley, which are the City of Henderson, the City of North Las Vegas, the City of Las Vegas, and Boulder City. Also, Nellis Air Force Base is a purveyor member.
What are the major metropolitan areas and agricultural areas that depend on Lake Mead water, and what percent of the water is used for different uses, household, industrial, and agricultural?
Well, the major metropolitan areas that depend on Lake Mead are, of course, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Tucson, and nearly all of Southern California, including Los Angeles and San Diego. The major agricultural areas are the Imperial Valley and Palo Verde Valley in Southern California, and that's where a majority of the nation's winter fruits and vegetables are grown. You know, Arizona also has a pretty considerable agricultural community. About 80% of Arizona's Colorado River water resources are for agricultural uses. Agriculture accounts for about 70 to 75% of Colorado River water use in the lower basin, and the remainder would be, you know, for manufacturing, residential, and for other uses.
So my understanding is that the water moves to the various uses and users in pipelines or tunnels. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have three intakes. Two of them are complete, and one of them is currently being constructed. Intake one was our original facility, and that has a pumping elevation of 1,050 feet. And intake two is our second pumping station, which has an elevation of 1,000 feet. And both of those facilities bring in water and send them to differing treatment plants and then into the valley. Intake three is being designed right now and constructed to be able to pull water from elevation 860, so much lower in the lake. But yes, those are the three intakes that hopefully within a year we will be able to utilize.
And what have the current drought conditions done to this process? How are they affecting the availability of water and your customers?
Well, obviously the first issue is with lowering lake levels and the drought situation is concern about our access to the resource. And that is the reason why we've put all the energy and finances into the construction of our third intake project. But another issue is associated with the drought is our concern for water quality. As the lake level lowers, our intakes become susceptible to a potentially poor water quality, which is at the upper portions of the lake. Both of our treatment plants are direct filtration treatment plants and were designed to be able to treat the water that is in the hypolimnion. And as we start to have the lake lower, we start to get into some epilimnetic conditions and water quality gets to be challenged. So that's another concern that we have. And also, and from a bigger picture perspective, some future challenges are, you know, just power production at both Hoover and Glen Canyon. As the drought continues to go on and lake levels lower, power production certainly becomes a challenge to both of those huge power generating facilities.
Can you explain the intakes, exactly how many there are and the one that's under construction right now?
Sure. Intake one was the original facility. It's at 1,000-foot elevation. It has an intake pumping station that has 20 pumps that have the capacity to pump 600 million gallons per day. Intake 2 was the second facility that was built, and it pulls water from 1,000-foot elevation, and it has 22 pumps with a capacity of 800 million gallons per day. And those are the facilities that are currently being utilized right now. Intake number three is under construction with an intake elevation of 860 feet, and we are currently still evaluating when we are going to construct an intake pumping station for that intake, but that will provide water to intake pumping station number two and to number one. The concern that we have, or the intake pumping station number three, addresses not only our water quantity and the resource, but it also addresses several concerns that we have, as I mentioned earlier, associated with water quality. Intake number three is going to be completed, we expect, by the middle of next year.
So let me take you back to this emergency connector. That's a way of getting around the limitations or bypassing the intake number one, the original?
The emergency connector helps us to be able to take intake 3 water from intake 3 and utilize it with the intake pumping station number 1. So previously, we didn't have a way to be able to do that. So essentially, it will help us to reduce our pumping costs and also get the better quality water for intake pumping station number 1 and then hence Alfred Merritt Smith Water Treatment Facility. So it's a good plan for us at intermediate lake elevation.
So as you described it, intake number 3 is either in place or under construction, but a separate pumping station for that is not yet in place.
No, it's not. We're evaluating right now because it is a relatively significant capital expenditure. And it's also got some technological challenges in the fact that we're looking at pumping elevations down potentially all the way to elevation 860. And when you're looking at a surface elevation of above 1200, it's got a pretty significant amount of pumping head that it has to overcome. So we're looking at that and evaluating whether or not we will need that. And that all depends on what happens with the hydrology on the Colorado River. So again, that's being evaluated as we speak.
So it sounds like emergency connection was a way of bringing intake number 3 online very rapidly.
Well, and what it really was also was additional flexibility. You know, we want to have as much flexibility as we can in dealing with these circumstances, because when you're talking about pumping the quantities of water that we are pumping, you know, there's a lot of energy demand associated with that. So we're really trying to keep our options open and provide as much flexibility to maximize the water quality and minimize our pumping costs.
We pause our podcast for a moment to thank our sponsor, WIS Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and material scientists who are solving problems throughout the built world. Visit their website at www.wje.com.
So you've been describing these intakes. Do these all feed the same service pipes that connect to your users?
Yes, all 3 of these are designed to be able to feed the 2 treatment plants that we have as the Southern Nevada Water Authority, and then to go and that water be transferred into the valley for distribution to our customers. So the answer is yes. It just gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility within our system, which is really important when you're dealing with drought.
I understand that the 3rd intake, under construction is really complex and, in fact, one of the most challenging tunnels in the world. What makes it so?
Well, the 3rd intake project is very challenging from several different aspects, but one of them is just the water pressure that we encounter. You know, we have over 4 trillion gallons of water sitting above where this tunnel is being excavated, and, some of the water ends up winding its way through, under immense pressure through fractures and pores in the lake bottom and down to the tunnel. So the tunnel boring machine itself was designed to be able to handle these conditions, and it's actually designed to be able to operate in circumstances up to 240 pounds per square inch. And in fact, we've already had circumstances where we have seen 200 pounds per square inch, so just 40 pounds per square inch below what the maximum capability of the machine is. So, and that 200 pounds per square inch happens to be the highest pressure ever recorded on any tunnel project. So that's one piece of it. Another is just the variable geology. In the 3 miles that this tunnel goes out to the point of intake, routing, there are several different, very different and varying geologies that the tunnel boring machine has to work through. So sometimes we're in situations where we're getting considerable water infiltration, and sometimes we're in areas where literally we hardly get any water infiltration into the cutting head area of the tunnel boring machine. And lastly, just the nature of the project. You're basically drilling a 20-foot in diameter tunnel underneath Lake Mead for 3 miles, and you are essentially, in order for the project to be successful and for us to be able to hit the intake, which is already set in the lake bottom, we have to be within 12 inches of our required location.
So I assume that GPS is not an option under that rock, so you need to use what I might call fairly traditional surveying techniques to know exactly where that tunnel is going.
That's right. There are several different techniques that are being utilized all to be able to get to that. So it's definitely capable and possible, but it's one of the things that makes it very, very complex.
And you have to get it right because it's almost 250 feet below the surface of the water.
That's exactly right.
Right. And if I understand correctly, that intake structure that's on the bottom of the lake seals off the entrance to the tunnel so that when you break through, that water doesn't drown the boring machine.
Yeah, that's correct.
So getting it right is quite important.
Quite important, absolutely. And if you just think about that, drilling for 3 miles, you know, and you're talking about the cutting head on that machine is basically set up to be able to make a 20-foot tunnel, and having to be on the mark within 12 inches is pretty significant.
What's the funding source for the intakes, and have any of them been fast-tracked as emergency expenditures?
The initial funding for the intake project is from the proceeds of bond sales. To repay those bonds, however, we've had 4 primary funding sources, which include our water rates. And in our water rates, we assess a infrastructure surcharge on the water bills of all of the users in the valley. So those who are directly benefiting from the regional water infrastructure are paying for a portion of the cost. The second is connection charges. When a developer connects a new water meter to the system, we collect connection fees that support the costs associated with the regional infrastructure. So that's a piece of it as well. We also have quarter-cent sales tax. You know, in the 90s, the voters approved a quarter-cent increase in local sales tax to help further fund the expansion of our regional water infrastructure. So that's a part of it as well. And lastly, the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act provides some additional funding sources. And basically, that is when there is a sale of Bureau of Land Management land, a portion of those proceeds go toward the infrastructure. So those 4 funding sources are what are utilized to be able to repay the proceeds from the bond sales.
I understand that Las Vegas has implemented outstanding water conservation and efficiency efforts. Can you tell us a little bit about this and whether other Colorado River customers are taking similar actions?
Sure. You know, the Southern Nevada Water Authority has a goal of 199 gallons per capita per day by 2035. Currently, we're around 219, which is actually a reduction of about 35% since 1990. And the reason that's important is that sets a goal for us and kind of gives us a strong focus as to what we would like to do and need to do as a community for conservation. We've pretty much focused primarily on outdoor usage. Because we're a new community, most of our fixtures and those types of devices installed in homes have been low-flow fixtures. So that's of benefit to us. I mean, one of the things that we also have is we also recycle about 100%, nearly 100% of our indoor water use. And we receive return flow credits for that water. So basically, for indoor uses, we get credit for that water that returns out to Lake Mead. We get credit to bring that back in, treat it, and be able to utilize that water. But as far as conservation goes, our outdoor conservation gives us the biggest bang for our buck. And one of the things that we've done that's been very successful is our Water Smart Landscape Program. We actually pay folks $1.50 per square foot for removal of turf. Okay, so if someone comes to the valley or if they have a home that they'd like to convert into a desert-friendly, desert landscape situation, we will pay them $1.50 per square foot in order to do that. And so far through that program, we've actually removed about 163 million square feet of turf. And that results in an annual water savings of approximately 9 billion gallons. So that's been highly, highly successful. We also have other programs like pool cover rebates. We're very involved in evaluating and utilization of water-efficient technologies. We have a Water Smart Home program. And also, the community has put in place development standards. So basically, if you are developing a new home or buying a new home, you do not have the capability of having turf in your front yard, and only 50% of the backyard can have turf in it. And basically the results of that have been our consumptive water use has declined by a third between 2002 and 2012, despite the influx of 400,000 new residents and 40 million annual visitors.
That's pretty impressive. As you look ahead, do you have a sense of what the worst-case scenario might be if the current drought trend continues in the western states?
Well, we're in our 14th year of this drought. You know, while we've had a couple of wet years during this time, you know, most of them have been dry. You know, during the last 14 years, the flows of the Colorado have been 71% of average. And the last 2 years were the driest back-to-back years on record. So we have basically taken the approach that we believe that this hydrological circumstances and this drought may likely be the new normal. So we have taken a posture of working on water efficiency for sure, as we talked about with water conservation. And we've put a lot of energy and resources as an organization into diversifying our water portfolio and our water resource picture. And I think another thing that we've done and that we need to do is to work together with the other states, lower basin states and upper basin states, to come up with cooperative solutions and resist this temptation to fight and litigate. So I think that, you know, as far as, you know, worst case scenario or those types of things, I think that we've been seeing that and we just have to adapt to those circumstances.
So do you see the current intake that you're building, the one that's at 860 feet, as the final intake?
Well, 860 feet is the elevation of the original Colorado River itself. And so we can't really go much lower. So I wouldn't necessarily see a need for us to be able to put in any additional intakes. A 20-foot in diameter tunnel also provides us with considerable capability. It's designed to be able to handle 1,200 MGD worth of capacity. So at least for the foreseeable future, I think intake 3 is going to give us a lot of security.
Let me ask, how is the possibility of the continuing drought influencing long-range planning for the Colorado River use in the other states aside from Nevada?
Well, we've already seen, you know, a great amount of cooperation amongst the seven basin states. 30 years ago, it was unlikely that we would have been able to see 2007 agreement approved or Minute 319 that allows the country of Mexico to store its water in Lake Mead. So, you know, I think the paradigm shift among the states seems to be underway. And I think the idea of shared sacrifice is going to be critical in the years to come. So I think working together to do our best in the face of this very difficult circumstance is going to be what's required.
Interesting and complicated set of interrelationships between technology, conservation, and allocation policies. I really appreciate your spending the time with us today to help us understand this situation, Dave. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.